she was a very real teenager. Sometimes she just did things that were so annoying or so self-destructive. But I loved her so much that it was like, oh, okay, we'll get through this together, Emily. How did you come about forging that?
Sometimes my books demand a lot of research. Not close your eyes, hold hands. The voice was alchemic. And I think it was alchemic for a couple of reasons. Over the years, as a journalist for Gannett's Burlington Free Press, I've written a lot about teens in trouble. There are at least 9 or 10 kids I've interviewed in the last 7 or 8 years alone who, in some cases, you can see are going to be okay. And in other cases, you can see in their eyes that they are already so far down the rabbit hole that there's just no coming back. And what links all of these kids isn't necessarily bad parenting, though there is a lot of bad parenting. In a lot of cases, it's brain chemistry and bad decisions. And Emily makes a lot of bad decisions, but I don't think that makes her, exactly as you put it, any less lovable, because she's fundamentally a really good kid. She's a good kid who is beleaguered by parents who are alcoholics, a nuclear meltdown for which her father was blamed, making her, in her opinion, the daughter of the most hated man in America, and she's now all alone. She has no one. But when I knew that this kid is just amazing to me, was when she's protective of Cameron, this 9-year-old foster child who's run away. And obviously the decisions she makes with Cameron are absolutely lunatic in some ways, completely lunatic. But at one point when she said that no one was gonna hurt him, my life had stood a loaded gun. Again, you know, accessing her Emily Dickinson crush, I just knew that this kid is to die for. I really care about her as a parent. I want her to be okay. I want desperately for her to be okay.
Why a nuclear power plant meltdown is sort of the background or the instigating incident for the book? Yeah.
I wish I could say that there's a conscious plan for most of my books or I have an outline. There usually isn't. I depend on my characters to take me by the hand and lead me through the dark of the story. And when I envisioned this book, all I knew was teen girl living in an igloo made of trash bags to stay warm against the cold of Lake Champlain in the winter. I needed a reason for her to be there. And I wanted her to be identifiable either to my readers as someone who could be their daughter or to my younger readers as someone who could be them. And so that meant I needed a reason to drop her into that horrific situation. And it might have been as simple as the fact that this idea was percolating during the Fukushima cataclysm. It might have been as simple as this idea was percolating when the Vermont state legislator was debating what to do with the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant. But I decided that a nuclear meltdown was a perfectly horrific and reasonable way to send Emily Shepard onto the streets. I think that's why. The other thing I would add to that also is that the exclusion zone around the Cape Abenaki nuclear plant in my novel is a fraction of the exclusion zone around the Fukushima reactors in Japan. And yet, we don't view Japan as a post-apocalyptic world or post-apocalyptic culture. And that was always in my mind when I was writing this book. And there are a couple of references Emily makes clear that, you know, the meltdown occurs in June. By the autumn, there are leaf peepers back in Burlington, Vermont, and in the northwest and southwestern corners of the state. And she's wondering in Los Angeles, do people even care? Do people even think about it?
A middle-aged man would seem ill-equipped to crawl into the skin of a 16, 17-year-old girl.
When my daughter Grace read the first draft of this book, she said something to me that was spot on. She said, "Dad, take this as a compliment because I mean it that way, but I think your sweet spot as a novelist is seriously messed up young women." She's right.
Because it's so central to the book, I'm not going to ask about the title, other than I'm sometimes titles are put on books by marketing departments. This is your title, I know.
It is. And here's what I love about the title, without revealing what it means. The epigraph from the novel is Emily Dickinson's, one of Emily Dickinson's quotes, "Tell all the truth, but tell it slant." And Emily Shepherd thinks like that. So here's what she shares about the title she's given to her memoir, Close Your Eyes, Hold Hands. It sounds like something that'll be on the front of a birthday card or a greeting card or an anniversary card. Imagine a couple holding hands, Emily Shepherd says, and jumping off a dock in a beautiful August sunny day into a perfect pond or lake somewhere. But the truth is, the origins of Close Your Eyes, Hold Hands are much darker, much more horrific, as is so much of Emily's story.
Your daughter's right. You do have a thing for getting into the heads of...
Seriously messed up younger. Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Thank you so much for sharing Emily Shepherd with me.
Well, thank you for your enthusiasm for and for getting her so well. I'm really grateful.
The book is Close Your Eyes, Hold Hands. It's a novel. I've been speaking with the author, Chris Bojalian, and Close Your Eyes, Hold Hands, published by Doubleday Canada.